Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Come see your locally owned and operated Linton Glass for all your glass needs. No matter what glass you need to replace, you can count on Linton Glass. Call us today at 601-835-4336 or find us on the web at lintonglass.com.
It's Mississippi's Radio Happy Hour.
Well, I'm going to Mississippi. Mississippi, here I come.
You're listening to Good Things with Rebecca Turner.
Well, I'm going to Mississippi. Mississippi, here I come.
Bringing you the good stories of Mississippi's people, places, and things to do. Now, here's Rebecca.
Good afternoon, Super Talk Mississippi. You're tuned into your Radio Happy Hour. That's the Good Things. I'm your host, Rebecca Turner. Now, don't forget, you can listen to Good Things. We are streaming live over at supertalk.fm. Also streaming from that Super Talk Mississippi app and your local Super Talk Mississippi radio station. You can watch us, too. We are on your computer, your mobile device. Just head on over to Super Talk TV. Now, you may have heard about an archaeological excavation at Camp Shelby that is uncovering some pretty cool stuff about a century-old World War I post hospital. They call it a dump, but we're not going to call it that. There's got to be some good things in it. Joining us today is Ms. Rita McCarty. She's an archaeologist and historian, and she's helping with the project. So welcome, Ms. Rita.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
I saw garbage dump, and I thought as I was reading it, I don't like that. Can we call it something better?
Absolutely. Archaeologists would call that a midden. So M-I-D-D. O-N, midden.
Okay, I take that. We like that better. Okay, I saw this and I thought this is really cool. Number one, you just never know what's lurking right underneath until you go digging and finding and what's kind of just been kept there for so many years. And then how much you guys are able to have been able to unearth in this project. Was this a happenstance, like a oopsie-daisy kind of find, or was this kind of more of a methodical, long-term plan to kind of uncover what's there at Camp Shelby?
Well, it was just kind of like a big surprise to us. We had planned this survey last summer, but it was not to identify the site in particular. It was just part of what we do here at Camp Shelby to be proactive. So whenever the Mississippi National Guard is planning for a project, you know, and they pick out an area, we want to say that, well, we've already surveyed that. We know what's there, and here's what we found. So we were trying to be proactive for the Mississippi National Guard, and we hired a consulting company, a private consulting company, to come out and take a look at this particular area. And they uncovered several sites, and I believe it was like 2 days before the end of the project, and they stumbled upon this site. And so it's kind of like Murphy's Law. I mean, whatever's going to happen is going to happen on the last day, you know.
And then once it rains, it storms, because you guys started really uncovering a lot of different things. What happens next when you have someone, you know, that you're contracting out with? Maybe they come across something that looks interesting. Like, are you the first person they call? Who do they call and say, hey, we found some, you know, glass, or we found some interesting finds? You know, do you dig deeper? Do you get excited? Kind of, you know, you don't brush it off. I recognize that. But kind of what's that next, like, quick trail of events on the last day?
Yeah, so as soon as they started uncovering these artifacts, they quickly realized it wasn't modern, that, you know, it had some age to it. And so they knew how I get excited about World War I sites here at Camp Shelby. So the project manager that was out there leading the team, he took a few pictures of some of the artifacts and sent it to me. And he's like, hey, what do you think? I'm like, ooh, I think you stumbled upon a World War I site. And the more they found, the more we realized quickly that it was related to the hospital that was here in 1917.
What gave that away, Ms. Rita?
Well, first of all, they started finding ceramic plates and bowls that had the medical insignia that date to that time period. We do find fragments like that here at Shelby that date to World War II, but the insignia is a little different. So based on that, we kind of knew we had something related to medical. There was also some test tubes, some microscopic slides, and, you know, just a couple of medicine bottles, things like that, that sort of gave it away, pointing toward a medical-type refuse.
So what would have happened? This would have been, what, 1917, 1918? Would this just have been an abandoned kind of hospital area that they maybe got, like, bulldozed down and just not properly cleaned up for these things to get kind of covered up for however many years? Or what do you think happened for them to stay there? Because with Camp Shelby, having people on it, you know, actively, you would wonder, why hadn't someone stumbled upon it prior to it becoming something to dig up?
Right. So, between then and now, I don't really know. I mean, it's always been in, you know, a kind of forested area, but never really an area that was looked at for as far as, you know, future development. And during 1917, when the midden was first being used, I would estimate it was used between 1917 and probably 1921, because the hospital officially closed in 21, but it was situated in such a way that the hospital staff was taking care of Camp Shelby soldiers as a whole. They were doing what they could to keep that medical waste away from, you know, the hospital. So it's located a good distance away from where the World War I hospital would have been. And I believe that's the reason that, you know, because of infectious diseases, Spanish flu was really big here in the late 1900s during World War I at Shelby. And so I would think that was, you know, a sort of way that they were protecting the rest of the camp.
So what happens next, Rita? I know you're super excited. You guys have already unearthed, I read, over 500 artifacts. I mean, will y'all keep looking in that area? Do you feel like, you know, you've got it cleaned out already? And then what happens to those artifacts?
Well, right now we do know that it is fairly large. We do have part of what the work that they recently did was to go in and they did what we call shovel tests to determine the size of the site. And that's where they dig small little holes and screen the dirt and quarter-inch hand screens. And whenever they didn't encounter any more artifacts, we knew that was kind of like a boundary. So we know that it's a fairly large midden, and it hasn't been investigated as far as full-blown excavation, where we put down the little squares that a lot of people associate with excavation. And so I would like to, in the future, be able to go in and at least do a couple of those test units just to see the different range of artifacts that may be in there. I know some of the artifacts that they found a couple of weeks ago was more home site type, residential type artifacts. So I want to kind of know how that fits in with the medical population. There was a camp adjacent to the hospital that was the location of married officers' families. Married officers could have their families here, and so they had a designated area next to the post hospital where they had their families. So, you know, I'd like to kind of connect the dots there to see if, in fact, the residents there, and that's my little camp area, use the refuse dump as well.
You're just like a kid in a candy factory, aren't you, Miss Rita?
Absolutely. It's fun.
How did you get interested in World War I artifacts, or specifically that historical era?
I was trained at the University of Southern Mississippi as a prehistoric archaeologist, or someone that studies Native American artifacts, how Native Americans lived, etc. And that was what I considered myself. And then when I went to work here at Camp Shelby 21 years ago, I quickly realized that this is a historic military installation. So my interest shifted toward the World War I era of Shelby. And the reason I like that so much is because that's our very beginning here. I mean, Camp Shelby was founded in July of 1917, and first boots on the ground was in August of 1917. And, you know, I really like that period in history because the U.S. had just entered the war. No one knew what was going to go on. Training camps like this were kind of obsolete. They didn't really have any camps like this. And when the War Department in Washington decided that they wanted to, you know, after they joined the war, they decided to establish 16 regular Army camps and then 16 National Guard camps. And that's how Camp Shelby came along. It was one of the National Guard camps. So that's the reason I'm interested in the World War One aspect.
Well, Miss Rita, you'll have to keep us updated with all the things from the Midden. Did I say that right?
You did.
Yeah, I like it better than garbage dump. I think it's super cool, and I know people can find exhibits, too, at the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum there. Yes. So I appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate you having me.
All right, you guys stick with us. We got more for you coming up next.
Feel the touch of a precious child and know a mother's love. Get a little chicken fried and cold beer on a Friday night. A pair of jeans that fit just right and a radio up. I'd like to see the sunrise, see the love in my woman's eyes. Feel the touch of a precious child and know a mother's love.
Discover Jackson's.
Making your afternoon just a little brighter. It's Good Things with Rebecca Turner on Super Talk Mississippi.
Worked all week, got it all done. Let's make a Tennessee River run.
Welcome back to Good Things. Don't forget, we are streaming live, as always, over at supertalk.fm. We're also streaming from that Supertalk Mississippi app and your local Supertalk Mississippi radio station. You can watch us, too. We are on your computer, your mobile device. Just head on over to Supertalk TV. If you missed our conversation with Miss Rita from the Camp Shelby, the Mississippi National Guard, not the Camp Shelby. You can listen back to it not long after the show in podcast form. In fact, you can get just about every Super Talk Mississippi show in your favorite podcast. That's Morning with Richard Cross, Middays with Gerard Gibbert, of course, us here with Good Things, and then the boys coming in up next with Sports Talk Mississippi, and they've got a lot of other podcasts as well. They've got Thunder and Lightning, The Rebel Report, and Eagle Hour to keep you updated all throughout the upcoming football season and more. And two, if you like some of the other Super Talk Mississippi shows, you can find those by searching for Super Talk on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you were watching at supertalk.fm, well, you didn't get to see Rhino because we had Miss Rita's wonderful picture up there, but I could see you. And as she was talking about the archaeological words that I don't know, Midden and others, you were shaking your head. And it always reminds me that baby Rhino wanted to be an archaeologist one day, you know, before he became whoever he is. And so were you like, is that cool hearing about things like that still to this day when you hear about uncovering and findings and that kind of like traditional archaeological style get you excited?
Oh, yeah. I never outgrew my fascination with things that are found under the dirt. And it's extended into adulthood to the point where about once a month or so nowadays, it was much worse. I've managed to wean myself off of watching it so much. But there's a British TV show that started in, gosh, the early to mid-90s, just based on the way they're dressed in the show. But it lasted until probably 10 years ago now. And it's a show called Time Team, where you can imagine with how many people have lived on the British Isles for how many thousands of years, they got a lot of stuff under the dirt, and they turned an entire TV show of archaeology into something fascinating because they show up at a site and they give themselves 3 days to dig the site and find what they can find to hopefully tell the story of the site. And there's something like 14 seasons with 10 plus episodes per season of just them showing up. Like one episode, they go to this little village. And they get all the school kids and all the families and stuff to come and help out. And they, like she was talking about, where you shovel it. where you just you basically dig a 1 foot by 1 foot square and dig about 6 inches of the soil up and you sift it to see if there's anything in there. They did that for this little village, and like 50 different people's backyards popped up with, hey, we got artifacts here. So they just went out to these people's backyards and dug up the backyard to tell the story of where they live. And it's stuff like that that the childlike fascination with digging up dinosaur bones, like those are exceedingly rare in archaeology. So it's kind of like finding gold.
Mm-hmm.
But finding stuff that people touched, that people made, that we had a hand in putting there in previous generations, you can find that anywhere. You can find that in your backyard. You can find that next to the creek by your house. It's everywhere. We just don't pay attention to it.
We don't pay attention to it. And then I wonder how many kids have found little bits and pieces and like unknowingly fall into that category, you know, just overlook or dismiss things that could be really cool right there under your, you know, your own backyard.
Especially as a kid. Like as a kid, you're digging a hole and you find a bottle cap from the 1970s. And it might as well be a dinosaur bone because it's before your frame of reference. It's before your time. And it might as well be ancient. But you find it and it's like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah. Well, I remember my oldest finding, I can't remember now, we ended up taking it to the one of the great shows that they have there at the Natural Science Museum that brings all those smart people who can basically tell you like what it is that you found in your backyard. And the way it looks, it's a piece of wood and it looks like it's got gold specks in it, like gold little whatnot. It's not, don't worry. We've kept it though. But Neely was convinced that she had found, you know, something with a little, I can't remember now. He wrote it on a piece of paper. We have it attached to it and sitting up on our shelf there in the house. But, you know, it means nothing, but it meant everything to her, like in her little sort of imagination. I'm still fascinated. Every now and then I'll get stuck on the shows that where they still go, like in Egypt, and look for the pyramids. And you think, you know, gosh, World War One was what, like mass harbor, like 100 and some odd, 110, 120 years ago or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, just a little over a century.
A little over a century ago. Well, you're talking about thousands like of years with the pyramids and how many people, you know, certainly before they got it where you had to get permits and had the right to go and you treated it respectfully, you know, they had the grave robbers and all that that came in. But even after that and like all of that, thousands of years later, they're still making discoveries or finding small pieces or things that people overlooked or went in for the big stuff and all that kind of stuff. And what's still there and can be uncovered if you have the patience. And then I would say maybe like a little bit of the spidey sense to know that you came across something because, I mean, that really was a garbage dump. I didn't like the name. I mean, it was. But the more she described it, Miss Rita there at Camp Shelby, what they found was it seemed like really was what you would have if you had a, you know, what do you call those things? Like a dump, but not what I'm thinking of. What's the big?
Like a burn pile, a compost
yeah,
pile.
Or something like that, you know. But you think how long 500 artifacts just sort of like sat and allowed like weeds and growth to come over it. And then, you know, wind and rain and storms and, you know, all of that to kind of, and then this whole other life in Camp Shelby kind of went on for 100 years kind of around it. And then it was like, why that day under that project was it time for them to kind of stumble across it? And then what will it tell us? Kind of like, you know, she mentioned, it's definitely fascinating. I don't know if I would have the patience for it the way they did, but I can absolutely appreciate like what they're finding and how cool that is and how excited Miss Rita and her team there is at Camp Shelby.
Well, it comes down to like you were saying, like going back to the Egypt talk, it takes a little bit of expertise, a little bit of spidey sense, but sometimes it just takes having an open mind or a different skill set. Like in the last 5-10 years in Egypt alone, they've discovered more examples of what I've been saying, of people have been people as long as people have been people, they found graffiti, ancient graffiti, written in languages that Egyptologists didn't speak. So, of course, they just saw it as scratches on a wall. But somebody that understood those languages, I think one of the ones that was found was a Mycenaean language, which, if you know your history, the Mycenaeans came before the Greeks. They're like the ancient Greeks to the ancient Greeks. Found a Mycenaean language scribbled on one of the walls in the Valley of the Kings. Well, the Egyptologists don't understand Mycenaean. They don't study Mycenaean. But a Mycenaean scholar went there to visit, saw it on the wall, and made a discovery. Yeah, there's graffiti where somebody visited and said they thought it was boring.
That's funny.
But people have been people as long as people have been people.
Yeah, that's kind of neat, too.
And when it comes to Egypt, it's really fascinating because it is so old.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really kind of hard to wrap your head around the timetable unless you start putting in little points of interest. Like, for example, everybody knows about Cleopatra,
mm-hmm.
the queen of Egypt. The pyramids were as old to Cleopatra as Cleopatra is to us.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Like, they were ancient and old for her.
They haven't found her yet, have they?
I don't think they found a tomb for her.
Yeah.
Or at least not one intact.
That was at least not on the episode I watched. They might have. I think that would have made. So when we were kids, Rhino, was it King Tut that they found? Or was
it was one that was still relatively popular because they discovered that in the 70s and then did a whole tour of the artifacts and everything. But I think that tour came back around in the 90s and was reinvigorated with a lot of the... Because that's one thing that science, especially archaeology and historians, they're really good about making something that's not really all that interesting to the mass populace into something interesting by tying it to whatever's popular. So, for example, I've got fascinated with paleontology because paleontologists started talking about it on Discovery Channel because Jurassic Park was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of thing with Egyptology in the 90s. The Mummy movies came out. That became a big hit. And all of a sudden, the Egyptologists and the people that study the history of Egypt are like, oh, there's interest. Here, learn something. Learn a little bit about this. And that's the way it goes to this day.
See, I could do that. I would have been more like an explorer and then call you archaeologists into it to sit on your ruckus and dig and shake things. I like the idea of the exploration and the uncovering, unless it came to caves. Those people are weird. Nobody walks into dark spaces with no lights and tries to figure out if there's a way out. You're built different than I am. But it's neat how those movies can have an impact on our life, and we may have another one. Speaking of movies, I meant. And we got Tanya coming up next here on Good Things. You wanna be-
Rebecca Turner.
She's smart and pretty.
Good Things with Rebecca Turner continues on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back to Good Things, streaming live on Supertalk.fm. I'm sitting here listening, trying to talk at the same time. Over at Supertalk Mississippi app, too. We hope you've downloaded that in your local Supertalk Mississippi radio station. But it's Friday. We got Tanya. So, Rhino, this is new movie or?
It's been out.
It's been out. The Odyssey. So I keep getting tickled every
yeah,
time.
Yeah, it's definitely the Odyssey.
It's definitely the Odyssey. But no, it's not. Any guesses, Tanya?
I'm going to guess Super Troopers, maybe.
Starts with an S.
Super
Spider-Man?
Yep.
So it's another, I was like, Superman?
Was it on the car radio?
No, this was at the party when he's watching MJ and M.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, you get good ones.
I know.
I'm just going for it. One day he's going to actually trick me up. It's going to be from the Odyssey and I'm not going to know it. And then I'll say something else.
Well, it's funny because, you know, when I'm watching a movie, I always think, man, this music's great. But then when Rhino plays the songs, I'm like, what?
But that goes to show, like, how much that slips in and, like, creates and helps the scene, but you don't necessarily walk away and, you know,
yeah,
remember kind of every detail. Okay, so what's new this week, Miss Tanya?
Well, the new one this week actually has good music. It's a good soundtrack, mm-hmm. But it's called The End of Oak Street. This is the one, it's Anne Hathaway, who is just become my new favorite person this year. She's always been a great actress, but I feel like she's getting a lot of the attention that, you know, she's just kind of always been in a lot of great movies, but kind of flew under the radar until Les Mis came out. And, you know, she got a lot of accolades for that. Very well deserved. So it's good to see her having such a big year. And she's expecting, and she looks like every pregnant woman wishes they look like when they're pregnant. She's
especially
just
like 42, 43.
Yes, and she's just glowing and gorgeous. And but this movie is so... I've not seen her in a movie like this. The premise is she's married, living in a little town. She and her husband are having marital problems. And her husband's played by Ewan McGregor, who's another great actor who, to me, does not pick junk. If he's in it, you can count on it to be a pretty good movie. But they're having marital problems. He's lost his job and isn't going to tell her because he doesn't want her to be mad, but she's not dumb, so she's figuring it out. So that's some stress. She's secretly wanting to leave him and writing a book behind his back, you know, maybe as an escape from the marriage. But so they've got a lot of stuff going on. They've got two little kids. One night, this bright light appears. And the next thing you know, they are living in a prehistoric atmosphere. There's dinosaurs everywhere. And so
God
suddenly...
God said, y'all gonna figure it out.
Exactly. And so they had to band together to survive their circumstances. And so you've got... To me, it made me think of Jurassic Park.
I was just thinking.
Yeah, meets... like some of the 80s classic movies.
I was like, this is the next story written for Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
They just wake up in the...
And it's produced by J.J. Abrams, who, you know, he is so good at this science fiction genre where you don't really know what's going on and you never really know what's going on, but it's okay. At least, you know, he's the mastermind behind Lost and the TV series, and that was one that had so many unanswered questions when it ended, but it was such a great character-based show, and I feel like that's kind of what we get from this one. The special effects are incredible. There's a lot of jump scares. It's PG-13, but I don't think I would let my younger kids go see this because it is extremely scary in some parts. Pretty gruesome in some parts, but Anne Hathaway is wonderful. Ewan is wonderful. The two actors that play the kids are great. So this movie is exactly what a movie should be. You totally are in it, trying to figure out what in the heck is going on, and you don't think about anything with this movie for an hour and a half. And so it's a lot of fun. You know, good one just if you're looking to escape for a couple of hours.
So it wasn't based like on a book or anything like that. It was
no.
Just- No.
Oh, not that I know of.
I said that. Yes. Is it based off a book, Rhino?
I want to say it was, yeah.
Yeah, it may be. But, you know, in the movie, there is a book based off of what happens. But
I'm sure
yeah.
She wrote that one and then, you know.
Yes, and so many movies are based off books, you know, even if they aren't bestsellers, the right person
I just think
reads it.
How do you come up with that, right?
I know.
I mean, but that's why
well, and that's
job.
Why I was so excited watching it is because... I'm like, this is so different from anything I've seen. And, you know, there's a few surprises in it that are really fun. So, yeah, I think if you've seen it all, if you've not seen Odyssey and Spider-Man yet, I would definitely say go to those over this. But if you've seen it all and you're just looking for a good time, definitely.
Good deal.
This is a fun one to check out.
They didn't leave you hanging with another, like with a sequel or anything crazy?
No, nothing crazy like that.
I appreciate those.
Yeah.
Just wrap it in a bow.
Mm-hmm.
We can move on. Yeah.
They, I mean, you know, like I said, they don't really answer, or not for me. Maybe it went over my head because I'm not a big science person, but I still don't really know what happened. But...
But you had a good time and the popcorn was fresh.
Yes, I enjoyed it very much. And then if you are like wanting to, well, first of all, there's another dinosaur movie out, Paw Patrol. The Dino movie is also out this weekend. Totally different movies. Do not go to the wrong one. So, yeah, our little Paw Patrol friends land on a mysterious dinosaur island after a big storm. And so they meet a stranded pup and, you know, have to figure out, face their fears and figure out what to do next. But my kids are a little too old. I missed Paw Patrol. But if your kids love Paw Patrol, for sure you're going to want to see this.
That makes my heart happy to know that some kids are going to get their first movie experience with that.
That's, yeah.
I mean, that's like a first movie. Like, you can make it through that. Like, that's going to be a fun one.
Yeah. And then Cat's Eye, Wild Hearts. This is the latest. There's so many concert movies out. And Cat's Eye is a musical group. I don't know if you knew that. I've heard of them, but I don't know anything other than that's their name.
Somebody
I wouldn't
wants
be able to
see
pick
them.
Them. If they walked in here, I wouldn't know who they were. But anyway, it's just a film about, you know, their
behind the
music
scenes
behind
all.
The scenes, their fans, footage of, you know, their lives and interviews from the group. So if you have a teenage daughter, I'm guessing you probably know a lot about this and they're going to want to go see it.
Anything else, though?
Yes. So if you do not want to get out this weekend.
Yes.
Don't Say Good Luck is a new movie on Netflix. It just came out today. This one is produced by Adam Sandler and his wife, Jackie, starring their daughter, Sunny. But this is a great movie. It is a tearjerker, so prepare yourself. If you need a good cry, this is a good one. But it stars Sunny Sandler, who we've seen her before. She was in the last Happy Gilmore. She was You're So Not Coming to My Bat Mitzvah that we saw a couple of years ago. She's a great young actress. In this one, she shows that she's a really good singer, too. But the premise is she's a teenager trying out for the school musical, thinking, okay, I'm going to get a supporting part. If I'm lucky, she gets the lead role. And so all of the stress and excitement around that, simultaneously, her mother has cancer that has just returned. And of course, they find out like the same day that she finds out she gets the lead in the play. So it's just the family dynamics of navigating that. But yeah,
I can already see how it is.
It is so good. And Melanie Lynskey plays the mom. She's another actress to me that just does no wrong. She's in so many great movies. She's in Yellow Jackets. If you watch that TV series, she's married to Jason Ritter in real life, but she's such a good actress. And I can't imagine anybody else playing the mom in this movie. And then Max Greenfield is her dad. Steve Buscemi plays her grandfather, and Bebe, I'm blanking out on her last name, but that from Frasier, they play the grandparents that are there to support, and they both do fantastic jobs in this movie. Every cast member was incredible, so definitely a great one, and it's only 90 minutes, PG-13, so it's a good one just to sit at home and watch.
I could get behind that, except for the tearjerker. I mean, you know, I like them. I just need to space them out just, you know, sort of just a little bit more. What's coming up, though? What you looking for next week?
Well, next week we've got Spa Weekend, which is going to be, in my mind, I'm thinking it's kind of going to be like the next Bridesmaids, like a adult comedy. But it's about friends who go to the spa for the weekend, as the title says, and it just looks like it's going to be really fun. And then we've also got Fast and the Furious is being re-released. It's 25th anniversary.
Way to make me feel old.
I know. That's just crazy. So, you know, you probably have kids that watch that movie that have never seen it on the big screen. So this is their chance. The Dog Stars come out the next week.
So lots of good things for us to keep up with.
Yeah, lots to watch.
All right, you guys stick with us. We got more for you coming up next.
Hi, this is
upbeat, positive, and stories that make you smile. This is Good Things with Rebecca Turner on Super Talk Mississippi, the Super Talk app, and at supertalk.fm.
Welcome back to Good Things. Don't forget we are streaming live, as always, over at supertalk.fm. Also streaming from that Supertalk Mississippi app. It's free. We hope you have downloaded that. It's also free to find us on your local Supertalk Mississippi radio station, or you can watch us. We are on your computer, your mobile device. Don't forget about watching us, too, on Roku, Amazon Fire TV devices. You can even find Supertalk on YouTube. You can also get us on your C Spire TV. That's Channel 70, right next to the Weather Channel. You can go to supertalk.fm/connect to find out more. You can connect, too, on the C Spire text line, 601-879-4395. Rhino, I want to know, how do you find the music for Music Fridays? Like, you've always done a good job, and it's a little, become a little part of the fun. When Tanya comes and meets us on Fridays, if you are just tuning in, Rhino always does a good job of kind of putting out the music to the lead-in, connected to a movie that's usually out, not always, but 9 times out of 10, and it's usually not what you would expect. I think Super Mario Brothers was the only one that was like dead giveaway. And then the Michael one too. But those are just so, like, you know, associated with said movie. But to find those songs, like the last couple weeks, that have been within the movie and interesting scenes, like, where do you go digging for that?
Usually I start off and check the box office results and see if a movie just...
Let me take notes so
water,
I can get it right next week.
Where it's like, all right, this movie made $80 million and every other movie behind it made $10. This is the popular movie of the week. And I go from there into, all right, what kind of trailers were for the movie? Because a lot of trailers will have songs that aren't in the movie. And that's like the first step. If I don't find a song that really tickles my fancy, I'll go to the next step of checking the soundtrack. But a lot of movies nowadays don't have soundtracks the way they did in previous generations, where it was music from and inspired by the movie. Nowadays, a lot of soundtracks are actually scores, where there's no lyrics. It's not popular music or refurbished music. It's instrumental music for the background. So from there, you start digging into, all right, well, what music was used in the movie itself? And if I've seen the movie, I'll kind of go through the mental Rolodex of, all right, what did I hear? What was in the scene? What was that? If I need a refresher, I'll go find the scene online. And if all else fails, if I don't have something come to mind, then I'll go to there are a couple different websites where they painstakingly list songs from movies and when they're played in the movie.
That's cool.
So I'll go through that list and go, does anything stand out? And usually by then, I've found something that'll work.
It's kind of neat, though, to think about. I know every now, like, even back from the Barbie movie, there was a song you played that was, you mentioned, was like in playing on the car. But all of those little pieces to a movie, you wonder, like, if it's done correctly and you are the patron, you don't notice it necessarily because it's all coming together to create the scene. It's all setting the stage for whatever the director wants you to feel, see, or think about during that moment. But as the person putting it together, the producer, the directors, and all of that, to think through down to, okay, they're in a Chevy truck driving down the road and it's late at night and they're listening to what? You know, even if it's not turned up loud, it's still got to then be categorized, you know, kind of all that. So, or you wonder if some of it's just happenstance. Like, do they just turn the radio on the truck driving down the road?
Very rarely, but that I do believe that has happened in the past, because 9 times out of 10, the director or the producer or whoever's in charge of the scene for the day, they've got a song in mind. But, not more often than not, but about half the time, the song they have in mind doesn't fit in the budget, because you got to pay for the rights to use the songs. So say you've got this action scene choreographed out and you're shooting the scene that day and you want it to be put to the tune of We Will Rock You by Queen. And then you go to the people that own the rights to Queen and go, hey, we want to use Queen in this movie. How much is it going to cost? Well, if that number is higher than you've got a budget for, you either got to go find more money to put the song in the movie, or you've got to find another song that will work with that scene. And that's kind of where the magic can happen, because then you're getting into the DNA of the music of what are the beats per minute? What's the genre of the song? What's the instrumentation of the song? How are we going to cut the song for this and all that? And it's it's just one facet of the million things that have to come together to make a good movie or TV show.
I agree with that. I will say, as much as love, hate, whatever, social media, if you can appreciate content creation sometimes down to its core, and I know now there's a lot of like templates and things, but people who can put photos fast to music on the, like, that does take a lot of talent. Now, a lot of time waste for a little short period of time on the internet. I get that, but like, there's still a little talent to it. All right, stick with us. You got more coming up next. You got the boys with Sports Talk from 3 to 6. Rhino and I'll meet you back here Monday at 2. But until then, I hope you all find time for the good things.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.